Hello and welcome to the Paul Garcia Show. I'm Paul Garcia, and on this show, I speak with some of the most interesting and inspiring people that live in the heartland of Illinois. Today, I'm speaking with Brad Maley of Fairbury. Brad is a recently retired teacher at Prairie Central Junior High School, where he was also a boys basketball coach. Brad taught a science class, and he taught it well, and a lot of students and faculty remember him for his teaching skills, but also for his fun-loving nature. Playing jokes and pulling pranks on his students and even his fellow teachers was a relatively normal activity for Brad. Or as many people know him, Mr. Maley or Coach Maley. In this episode, we talked about Brad's upbringing, his college experience, his incredible stories from his days of teaching and coaching, a wild grain bin accident that left him wheelchair-bound for a few months, and much, much more. It was an absolute pleasure talking to Brad, and I know you'll enjoy this conversation. The vast majority of this episode is available here in a video format, but the last few minutes of it will be concealed by an image of Brad and I. You'll still be able to hear it like normal, but if you want the full video version of all of my episodes, and even some bonus material, please consider heading over to my Patreon page at Patreon, patreon.com/PaulGarcia, and becoming a silver or gold member. For just the cost of a cup of coffee, you can support this show so I can continue to go around and broadcast the amazing stories and insights from great people in this area. And you'll also gain access to full-length HD video versions of each episode, as well as access to an exclusive bonus episode every month, as well as bonus clips from each show. Alright, that's my plug. The link to that page is in the description, and if you enjoy this show, enjoy hearing the stories of local people that you know and love, then consider heading on over there. And now, I'd like to take a moment to thank this show's amazing sponsors, Iroquois Farmers State Bank, the beloved Fairbury Furniture, and PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu. Farmers, no matter what crop you raise, at Iroquois Farmers State Bank, they understand that what you are really trying to do is grow your future. Being family-owned and operated for over 100 years, IFSB prides itself on exceptional customer service and separating itself from the mega bank mentality of banking. Here, they work with you like family. So if you are looking to get an operating line or a farmland loan, Iroquois Farmers State Bank is here to help you. Zachary Meister is their current ag lender, and he grew up in the farming community of Fairbury, Illinois. He understands the operational as well as financial aspects of farming, and that it's a legacy industry. When the farm operation is passed down to a relative, most lenders are hesitant to take the risk, but Zachary understands. For all your ag loan needs, give IFSB a call at 815-265-4707. Again, that's 815-265-4707. Iroquois Farmers State Bank. Now, if you're a farmer, or any human for that matter, then you probably appreciate high-quality, affordable furniture. That's where Fairbury Furniture steps in. They carry tons of gorgeous name-brand coffee and dining tables, recliners, beds, and really basically any kind of furniture that you need. Their store is huge, and their selection is vast. If you want your home's interior to actually look stylish and great, this is the place to go. They've got loads of 5-star reviews online because they are Central Illinois' premier furniture supplier. When you decide it's time to beautify your home, head to Fairbury Furniture in Fairbury, Illinois. You know what's not good for furniture? Practicing jiu-jitsu in the house. This is one of the many reasons you should be going to PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu in Normal, Illinois. Here, you'll learn how to have a high level of discipline, mental and physical toughness, and elite level combative and defensive techniques. Learn submissions, learn takedowns, and learn what to do if a fight hits the ground, and get in probably the best shape of your life, and get into PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu in Normal. You can be any kind of human being to enroll here. All ages, genders, shapes, and sizes are welcome. It's as inviting and educational as it is exhausting and exciting. Jiu-Jitsu is incredible, and it's about time you learn how to do it. Shoot them a message on Facebook saying, "I'd like to learn more," and they'll take it from there. PSF Legacy Jiu-Jitsu. I love this place. All right, there we have it. Show these businesses some love and let them know that the Paul Garcia Show sent you. All right, let's get this show on the road. Here is my conversation with Brad Maley. Ready to go?
Yep.
All right, well, sounds good. Brad Maley, thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, Paul.
My pleasure. You're kind of a household name in this area, I would say. I mean, the majority of people know who you are. You were a Prairie Central Junior High School teacher, science teacher, as well as a basketball coach. And before that, even, you were a Fairbury Cropsey Tartar. So before we start talking about your experiences in your adult life, I'd love to know more about your life growing up here.
Okay, yeah. I actually just grew up 3 miles down the road from where we're at right now, and was, so as a country boy, and growing up in the 60s and 70s. So we spent almost all of our time outside doing different stuff, some good, some not so good. Always got together with neighbor kids and played in barns and creeks and different stuff like that. Just typical growing up back in that time period where you made your own fun.
How many siblings did you have?
I have two sisters and an older brother.
Okay, got it. So four kids, grew up on a farm here in Fairbury.
Yes. Yeah, we grew up, we had about 8,000 to 10,000 chickens.
I'm like, holy cow, that's no small operation.
No, this was a big poultry area back at that time period, and we always said that's why Mom and Dad had four kids, so that they'd have enough labor to, because at that time you had to pick all the eggs up by hand. Mm-hmm. And so every day we'd go out and pick up eggs.
That, do you think that honestly is partly the truth? Like, I've heard of families doing that, like that own businesses, like they'll have a lot of kids and those kids will be working pretty hard at those businesses.
I don't know. We always thought maybe that was part of it, but not sure. Then a little bit later, we switched the hog house out to growing hogs inside, confinement hogs. And that was, I think I was in junior high, and that was kind of a new thing at that time. And I really liked that because everything was automated. And, you know, you didn't have to feed, you didn't have to do different hand things, go out and push a button, and that was about it.
So what, as a kid, would you say that growing up on the farm, were you accustomed to hard work probably more than your in-town friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just, you know, it was expected at that time. And back in those days, we walked beans all the time in the summer, or a lot of people detasseled corn. I never did that, but always walked beans and, you know, work for neighbors, whatever they need help with.
You can maybe answer this question a little more truthfully now that you're a retired teacher. Would you say you were like a good student? Would you have liked to have taught a kid like you when you were teaching?
Well, when I first said I was going to be a teacher, a lot of people made the comment, well, you ought to be a good one because you know all the stuff that the bad kids do. And I said, well, there's maybe a little bit of truth to that, you know, but I was an average student and definitely wasn't my top priority. And, you know, growing up, and, you know, there was bigger and better things to be doing.
All right. I want to know, I'm genuinely curious, what were your interests? I mean, I'm sure most of your time was taken up from working on the farm. Mm-hmm. What were you interested in growing up?
Sports and farming.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I loved the farm life and you know, raised my own hogs and did the 4-H thing and everything. And then played every sport that was possible. And so did the baseball, the basketball. My favorite sport was football.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
You never wrestled, though.
No wrestling. Only in P.E.
Yeah. They wrestled in P.E.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it gave me a respect for wrestlers like yourself because it is a lot of work. It's probably more like, you know, the backyard wrestling than it was, you know, regular wrestling, but we had a lot of fun with it.
So, of course, everyone knows that you were a teacher. In order to become a teacher, you have to go to college and get like an education or a teaching degree. So tell us about where'd you go to college and what was that experience like?
I went to ISU, mainly because it was just close, and they had a good ag program, and I wanted to go into ag education.
Oh, so that, okay, got it. You went in with the plan to go into ag education.
Yeah.
Got it.
I had a real good high school ag teacher. Name was Jack Kennedy, who just happened to pass away not too many years ago. And we had a really strong FFA chapter, Fairbury Cropsey, and so that got me interested in becoming an ag teacher then. So I went down to ISU and lived down there for a semester, figured out city life wasn't for me, and commuted the other 3.5 years.
That's really interesting, but at the same time, it's not surprising. I mean, you take a farm kid that's grown up in a small town Fairbury for his entire life, and all of a sudden throw him into an insanely densely populated college campus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, what was that like for you? Why didn't you like it? Why wasn't it for you?
Oh, I don't know. It was just such a adjustment, I think. And one thing that kind of struck me was the drug flow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You remember, this was the late 70s.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. And that was all new to me, and seeing stuff go through where you lived, and that was probably the biggest turnoff. But then I was going home to help Dad on the farm anyway during the busy times, and just did not like living in Bloomington Normal.
I always wonder if, you know, the 70s, you always hear stories about how, you know, the hippie movement, it was kind of like the later part of that hippie movement. So a lot of drugs, a lot of marijuana.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was worse then than it is now. I really do wonder. And there's really no way to find out unless there's some hidden numbers or something. I don't know.
Right, right. I would have no idea either, but the marijuana was very, you know, readily available at that time. And saw a lot of that flowing through the apartment complex we lived in.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy that it's legal in Illinois now?
Yeah, to go from that to be legal now. Yeah, crazy.
So when did you figure out that you wanted to teach? Apparently, you went in with the intention to become a teacher.
Well, junior year or so in high school, my mom informed me that I was going to college, even though that wasn't my plan necessarily. And I, like I say, with a strong FFA background that we had there at Fairbury Cropsey, it was my deciding point to go into ag education then.
So your mom is the one who more or less made you go to college.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to stay home and farm, raise hogs and whatever. And that was not the same plan mom and dad had. So,
right.
So that was my next best step.
Okay, this is something that's really interesting that we talked about before we started filming, and that's, you said you commuted for 3.5 or so years of college, and you commuted with your girlfriend who would go on to become your wife, is that right?
Yeah, we didn't really commute a whole lot together because of our schedules. At the time, I was still working part-time at the Farmer's Grain Elevator in Fairbury.
But you were still together throughout all of college, is that right?
Yeah, we started dating as freshmen in high school and made it through college. And
wow.
Got married after my senior year in college, yeah.
Congratulations, that's really cool. I didn't know that whole story until a few minutes ago.
Yeah. My wife and I were in the same class. I was like the oldest in my class and she was the youngest, and she was still finishing up when we got married. And
wow.
So I think for a couple of years, she was working and trying to finish up her accounting degree.
Ooh, accounting. Okay. You said she loves it. Yeah. To me, I did accounting for a year, and I was like, that is not fun. So
No, math was never my favorite subject, and we still laugh that my senior year in high school, I needed a second math class because you had to have two math classes back then to graduate, and I'd had Algebra 1, and didn't like that at all. So I took, I don't remember what it was called, consumer math or general math. It was, you know, adding, subtracting, math for dummies.
Yeah.
And aced it. And in hindsight, that was the best class I ever took.
Really?
I used that more than I've ever used algebra.
I took an algebra class and I had the algebra teacher tell me and the whole class, to be honest with you, the only time you're going to use this is if you become an algebra teacher. And I was like, oh, man, jeez.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense, but that's just the way it was. You had to have the math, and then somehow I made it through college without taking a single math class.
Where'd you excel at in school, would you say? If anywhere, you know, but I assume you did. You're a teacher.
Surprisingly, in high school, other than ag class, I really liked the English classes and not so much the composition because I had a tendency not to always read the stories that we were supposed to read. But you go back to the old grammar stuff and the diagramming sentences and all that stuff, which they probably don't even do anymore. I always enjoyed that. And so, yeah, actually, Hard to believe, but
yeah, that's very surprising.
Yeah. And the science, I enjoyed the science too.
Okay. Before we go into how you decided on teaching science or how that just came about, why did you decide to go into teaching? You decided early on, and did you ever change your major during college?
Yeah, nope. I had decided, you know, that's what I wanted to do. If I couldn't farm, I was going to, you know, be an ag teacher, and never changed or never thought about changing.
You liked agriculture, and you saw it as a good fit to become an ag teacher. Is that basically how it went?
Yeah. And then I was kind of hoping, you know, down the road I could still get involved in the farming stuff, and it happened to work out that way, so it worked out really good.
Okay, how did you become a science teacher at Prairie Central Junior High School? Kind of walk me through the chain of events that led to that.
Okay, yeah, not real sure, but I had came to Prairie Central when they built the new junior high building, and kind of as a last minute thing, the school board decided to add back the ag industrial program. So Mr. Carrico had called me. I was teaching down at Ridgeview to see if I would have any interest in coming back and, you know, starting up the ag industrial program again. And so I thought about it. I said, yeah, that'd be kind of cool. And so we did that. We started the first junior high FFA chapter in the state of Illinois. And I think Rodney Baylor was
the very first
junior high chapter. And in the meantime, I had picked up some farmland. My dad was getting close to retirement. And so it worked out good to get out of the teaching ag and especially the FFA things so I would have time to do the farming. Okay. And it just happened at that time, Mr. Zick, who had been teaching at the junior high forever, was going to retire, and so I applied for his job, and with all my ag background, I had plenty of science credits, and so that's when I made my move to teaching the science. But being able to teach and farm at the same time was always my hope.
Okay, and how did that become possible?
My wife and I, we made some good decisions along the road. We started to pick up some farmland back in the 80s. We couldn't afford it, but we made ends meet. And it's kind of weird because back then, farmland, good farmland around here was selling for about $1,700 an acre.
$1,700 an acre is nothing?
No, yeah.
I don't know these numbers at all.
Today it's about $10,000 an acre for the same ground.
Oh, wow.
So we picked up some ground over the years, and then when Dad retired, I started farming the family farm then.
So now I want to talk to you about your teaching experience as a whole.
Okay.
First of all, so you were extremely busy early into your teaching career because you were both farming and teaching. To me, that's insane. Oh, and also you picked up coaching basketball for a while.
Yeah.
How did you do that? How did you balance your time, and what did your days look like?
Oh, it made for interesting days. Of course, I was a lot younger. And we would have some early morning basketball practices. So we'd be getting up at, you know, 4 a.m., getting over there by 5:30 to get ready for 6 o'clock morning practice and then go through the school day and then get home. And if it happened to be harvest time, you know, I'd get home, get all the wagons taken into town and start combining about 7 or so in the evening and quit about midnight when I had everything filled up and then start over the next day.
How did you feel during that? That can't be healthy. It's impressive. I'm impressed. It's a cool thing that you did,
yeah.
But that had to have some ramifications on your health, right?
I don't know. I did the 5 acres of pumpkins and gourds and, you know, Indian corn, all that stuff every fall too. And so throw that into the mix. It made for some short nights.
Oh my word. And do you miss teaching? Do you miss coaching? Do you miss that time of your life?
I definitely miss the coaching and would have loved to stay on, but Prairie Central's policy was that once you retire, you retire. And I did not miss the teaching.
I think that's hilarious.
I hate to say this, but not at all. I did it 33 years. I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I, I went back and subbed just a little bit that first year and decided there was a reason I retired, and haven't gone back since.
Now, just to kind of keep with this this topic, what was probably the toughest part about teaching? I personally think that teaching, and you were a good teacher. I had you as a teacher, so you know, it's funny that you say like you do not miss teaching, because you were fun. What I remember about you is you were fun. You weren't exactly by the book to the point that you were just a rule follower and boring. Mm-hmm. You were rather exciting as a teacher, I would say. But what was your least favorite part about teaching?
Oh, I don't know. I tried to keep it fun. I mean, the students got to have fun. The teacher's got to have fun, so you avoid that burnout. Probably the biggest thing I didn't like about teaching. I loved the teaching, but it was the thing I always complained about, my colleagues would vouch for, was the institute days, the conference days, the things where you're not physically teaching. And in my book, if you could do away with those other things somehow, I would probably still, you know, love teaching. Mm-hmm. But that kind of stuff just gets old after a while.
Yeah, you hear about that in the corporate world all the time, that mm-hmm. the meetings are the worst part. It's just like a waste of time, it seems. Mm-hmm. It's like those efforts could be better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, and the discipline changed so much in my 33 years of teaching. I won't mention any names, but when I was down at Octavia, when I started, I stuck my head into a basketball practice, and the sophomore team was running plays in front of me, and this one kid just kept screwing up time after time after time. And after about the third or fourth time, the coach called him over, grabbed him by the shirt collar, slapped him upside the head, threw him back in there, and off they went.
Really?
And, you know, and then you go to the other extreme at the end of my teaching career. We couldn't even use students' names on internet or on the email and stuff because we didn't want to, you know, violate their privacy. And you know, the political correctness, I think, has just changed the scenery of teaching so much.
I am not surprised by that opinion at all. It, to me, it's frustrating seeing how the political correctness has kind of put a lot of boundaries on what you can and cannot do in teaching. I don't think that's beneficial for the education of kids, the kids' experience, and the teacher's experience, and their ability to better teach and everything. So mm-hmm. what parts of the political correctness do you think kind of hindered your teaching? Like what was just unnecessary in your opinion?
I always felt bad for the average to upper level students, because it just seemed to me that we geared so much towards that lower level student, which obviously need extra help and things like that, and I'm all for that. But it seemed like we kind of let the middle and upper level kids suffer to try to bring the lower level kids up. And I know that sounds maybe bad, but you know, they all need their own paths to succeed, and
absolutely.
I sometimes think maybe we slighted the top half of the kids to bring the bottom half up some.
Yeah, I mean, for Pete's sakes, every student is an individual with unique capabilities, and those who are more able in school should be mm-hmm. challenged, I think. Why? Mm-hmm. It's a shame. It's almost wrong to not challenge them and push them to be all that they can be
yeah.
for the sake of just keeping, you know, maintaining the average, as you say.
Right. I think that's exactly right. And then the other thing I think that goes hand in hand with that is the discipline. You know, I mentioned it just changed so much. One of the few times I did go back and sub that first year I retired, I actually walked a kid down to the office because he kind of just went off in the classroom. I was yelling out the F word, you know, this uh-huh. and that, and took him up to the office, and I got chewed out the whole way up to the office by this 12, 13 year old kid.
Oh my.
And took him in, principal took him, and our assistant principal, and he said, you know, thanks for bringing him up. He said, he'll probably be back down in about 10 minutes. And I kind of looked at him. I said, what? He said, yeah. He says, you know, way things are set up, he'll cool down and then he'll be back in the classroom. And I said, I just told the assistant principal, I said, not in my classroom. You know, if that's the way it is, then I can't teach. And I never subbed after that.
Wow. You know, oh my. Yeah, I bet that was wildly frustrating for you.
It was. And once again, it goes back to that. I felt so bad for those other, you know, 20 some kids in the class that have to sit and listen to that kind of language being thrown around. And then, you know, they see there's no real consequence because you throw the kid out and here he comes back in the classroom 10 minutes later. And yeah, I was just too old fashioned to tolerate that kind of discipline, I guess. So it's probably a good thing I retired.
What kind of lesson is that to those kids that are behaving? You know, mm-hmm. if I do that, I'll just be back in 10 minutes, yeah. No harm done.
Right.
It's not exactly how the real world works either.
Right.
So it's like, man,
yeah.
I don't even know what to say exactly about
yeah,
that.
But. Yeah, no, but just, like I say, things have changed and just the way it is.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, probably a good thing you retired when you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heaven forbid you smack some kid because right, he's right. acting crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I'm glad you said that, really. That is, I'm sure, something that annoys a lot of retired and current teachers who have been mm-hmm. teaching for a while, that right. change in disciplinary actions and protocol and stuff like that. Mm. But now I want to ask you, what's one of your favorite memories from teaching or and or coaching?
Oh, gosh. My first 15 years was at the high school down at, it was Octavian Ridgeview. Loved that. Then when I moved up to Prairie Central at the junior high, after a year or so up there, I always said I would never go back to teaching high school. Just love the junior high kids. They're an age where they don't know everything yet, or at least they don't think they do most of the time. Mm-hmm. And we just had a fabulous staff at the junior high, the 13 or so years I was there. And there was, you know, from time to time, there was maybe a practical joke or two that was pulled. Somebody seemed to always blame on me.
Really?
Yeah, and I was just there trying to, you know, do my job and teach kids. And
you can say whatever you want if there's a story yeah. you're thinking
oh,
about.
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't know where to start. But probably the all-time favorite, I taught with Mr. McGuire, and he was kind of a bad influence. You know, he was much older than I was, and I kind of gave in to peer pressure once or twice to Mr. McGuire. And we were having a faculty meeting one morning, and Mr. Vaughn was our principal, and somehow he got distracted by Mr. McGuire and a fart machine got put underneath his podium in the meantime. And so the meeting started, Mr. Vaughn's up there just, you know, going through the agenda and everything and got to kind of a quiet time. And all of a sudden this fart machine goes off and Mr. Vaughn was really good without missing a beat. He just kept going and the next silence came and it went off again.
Oh my gosh.
And without missing a beat, Mr. Vaughn says, Mr. McGuire. And I couldn't even look up. I had tears rolling. I, you know, hiding my head. And then the funny thing was after the meeting, we were all walking back to our classrooms and one of the lady teachers made the comment, oh, I just felt so bad for Mr. Vaughn, you know, that he had those problems up there. And we were just dying laughing.
But, that's hilarious.
Well, that was just one. And I mean, it just went on and on. And one other one I would share, we had another teacher I really liked was Mrs. Mashing. And she was one of those teachers where
I loved Mrs. Mashing.
Oh yeah. Great.
I hope she sees this.
Yeah, I hope so. She had a classroom just down the hallway from me, and she's one of those that everything has its place in a classroom. You know, paper clip has to be laying just a certain way, and the books have to be a certain way, and you know, the decorations, whatever. And so I had a small third-hour class. I only had like 13 students in there or whatever. So we, at that time, the show Trading Spaces was real popular on TV. And so one day I decided, oh, I'm going to take my class. I knew Mrs. Mashing wasn't in her classroom that hour. I said, we're going to go down there and play some Trading Spaces. So we all.
What's Trading Spaces? Is it like, is that when you swap
they go
like
in,
furniture and stuff?
Yeah,
like
they go in and rearrange and whatever, you know. So I had all my students. They were all game for it. And so we all grabbed something in my classroom, and we went down there, and we moved all her stuff, took some of her stuff, and left some of our stuff. And it wasn't very long after that, here she comes stomping down my room. And, you know, I said, I don't know. I just in here teaching class. And,
oh, wait. And, so did she come in while there were kids in the class? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and just stuff like that. We just had a lot of fun. And secretaries, they got their brunt of the action, too. And the best one, we were outside doing something in science, and one of the kids found a toad, so we brought it in. And I snuck that up to the office and put it underneath Debbie Steininger's coffee cup.
Oh,
upside down, and picked that up. The toad went flopping across her desk up there. And just, I mean, it just went on and on. And so we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And,
oh, man. And, I love those stories.
Know, and the junior high kids are that age where they, you know, they go along with stuff, and they had fun too, I think. And it just, you know, makes every day fun and interesting to go back to school.
Yes. Oh man, I love teachers like that. I loved teachers like you that had fun, and I mean, I really am a big fan of playful, harmless pranks like that. Mm-hmm. Like truly, that's so fun. You're so lucky to have had that group of people there. Mm-hmm. Something tells me that not all schools, not all junior highs and high schools have faculty like that. That's so ornery, mm-hmm. and that's so willing to go along with that type of stuff and have fun. And
and the weird thing is, it was really an older staff. You know,
was it?
Oh yeah. We didn't have a whole lot of younger staff for most of the time, and then you know, of course, it slowly. By the time I retired, I was you know, of course, one of the older teachers that was still left. So yeah, it was an older staff, and knew how to have fun and still get things done in the classroom.
All right. Last little question about, you know, memories from teaching, but do you have a moment like that a student made you laugh, or like that you just laughed at a student, or just a funny moment with a student or students?
Oh yeah. I could go on forever on those too. Just a lot of different things. One of my favorite things I always did when we were studying, how light moves and through empty space and different stuff in science class. And I'd always get a volunteer. Of course, junior high kids always volunteer, you know, there's always 20 hands go up and when you ask for a volunteer. So I'd always get one and have them stand in the window, and I'd tell them, get your ear up, you know, closer to the window so the light can get through. Long story short, it was just the kids never forgot what we were teaching that moment, because if it came up on a test or whatever, they'd automatically just think of whoever that student was that was standing there getting, you know, an example made of that. I don't know. It's just,
I bet there were a few kids that didn't know what was going on.
Right. Yeah. Some of them you had to explain it to. But, and then we'd send kids. If I had a kid I got tired of in class, I'd maybe send them down to Mrs. Winger or somebody and see if she was done with the board stretcher yet. And
the board stretcher.
Yeah, the board stretcher. That was
my dad's told me about this one.
Yeah. And they'd come back and I don't know where the board stretcher's at or whatever. I said, well, did you ask for the left-handed one? No, I just asked for board. Well, go back and ask for the left-handed one, you know.
The left-handed board stretcher.
Yeah. And all the students, they'd have a ball. I see students today that still bring up, hey, you remember when you sent me for the board stretcher? Or we were up at Big R one year and out in the garden center, and a young man came up and he says, hey, do you remember when you made me do stapler push-ups? And first of all, I had no idea who the kid was because,
you got 1,000 kids coming through.
Yeah, and they changed so much from junior high. And, and I said, well, I remember the stapler push-ups, but I don't remember, you know, who you are. You're going to have to help me out. So he told me, and I said, oh, yeah, I remember that now. You know?
I think those jokes like the board stretcher, the left-handed board stretcher, and I've heard some people talk about, like, blinker fluid.
Yeah,
Skyhook. The what?
Skyhook. That was always Mr. Rio's favorite one. He'd send a student down looking to see if I was done with the sky hook or not. Just, you know, dumb stuff like that. So,
that's awesome.
Kept it interesting.
Oh, for sure. It's interesting just to hear about, much less actually experience that as a student or as you.
Yeah.
But so, all right. It's hilarious that you said you don't miss teaching, but I sure enjoy hearing the stories from it. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, you still seem to stay extremely busy even after retirement. Mm-hmm. You just built this. We're at your house right now. Mm-hmm. This place is beautiful. It's brand spanking new, right off of this pond. And So anyways, tell us about what are you doing now? Since you've retired, what's your life been like?
It's changed a lot. I had a farm accident 10 summers ago and fell and shattered my ankles and heel and everything. Yeah. And
tell us, can you tell that story? Oh. I remember because I was in eighth grade and you had to teach from a wheelchair for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I was tearing down some old grain bins at mom's place and I was up on top of the second one, and as soon as I cut the spout coming down from the leg, the whole roof caved in, and I went down with it.
So paint this picture for me. A grain bin, those big ones like this one across
the... Yeah, they weren't, you know, real big ones. They were old ones. It was like 23, 25 feet up.
Okay.
And...
You were on the roof?
I was on the roof and had a torch in my hand. I was cutting the downspout to get it out of the way, and as soon as I got cut through it, the that's all was holding up the old roof anymore, and it just popped the bolts and it went down, and I went down with it
from 25 feet up,
down to the concrete below.
What was that like when you cut through and you heard some metal start moving and you felt the roof kind of caving in underneath you? What was that like?
I don't remember too much because it all happened so fast, but all I remember is trying to grab the side of the grain bin as I went by it, and I ripped a fingernail off, and I remember hitting and just instantly got sick.
I think you've told me this briefly. I remember hearing this. So you as you're falling, you reach for something.
No.
Doesn't work.
No.
Fingernail comes off. You fall 25 feet. How do you hit the ground?
Luckily, feet first. And
If it would have been, you could have, that could have been bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't have made it otherwise, I don't think. And left foot must have come down first. And I just remember hitting, and then I think I threw up. And then, of course, the roof things are coming down and banging. I thought,
oh, it's not done falling
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, I got to get the H out of here, you know. So I crawled over to the door, and of course I was terrible about having my phone with me. So I'd set it on the tractor outside because it was hotter than Dickens that day. It was in July. So I just remember crawling over to the tractor and trying to get up on the tractor. So my left foot was shattered, and then the right one, it didn't break anything, but I couldn't put any weight or anything on it.
So are you just army crawling out of that bin that's fallen apart? Did the roof all fall in?
Yeah. The bin was standing, just the roof came in, and lost my glasses on the way down, and so I finally got my phone and couldn't read anything, you know.
Is it just you here also?
Yeah, it was just me. Yeah, mom was up in the house, and so I got to my phone and I got it on, and I could read enough. I knew I was in my phone contacts, and so I tried calling my sister Karen. Well, she answered, but she was in Chicago, so she wasn't any help. And
what'd you say to her? It's like, hey, yeah, I just had a big fall.
Yeah, I need a ride to the hospital. And so I finally got my mom. She didn't answer at first, and then she finally I got her to answer. She called back, I think. She had been in the house getting ready to go into town for something. And I said, I need a ride. And she said, I'll call the ambulance. And the worst thing was I had to lay flat on my back for 3 weeks after I fell, just to get the swelling down enough so they could do surgery. And that about killed me. So I think in 10 years, I've had 8 surgeries.
All on that the ankle area?
7 on the bad ankle. And last year, about this time, I had surgery on my good ankle. Got a new ankle about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. in the left ankle. Doing real good. Now the joint across the middle of my foot needs to be fused together. It's causes a lot of pain, but if I do that, I'll basically have a club foot. And so we're trying not to fuse that till we have to. That was kind of a bad stretch. That was 2010 in July, right at my son's birthday. The year before, my dad passed away after a real short bout of cancer, about in August. And a year before that was when my nephew, Brian Munns, got killed. And that was also right at the same, almost the exact same day. So we had 3 years there in a row where we all had, you know, some bad things happen. And
that must have been a tough time for your family.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, it was. It really was. And with Brian going, and then with Dad, they diagnosed him with 1 to 3 months to live, and in 2 months he was gone.
What kind of cancer did he have?
It had started as colon cancer, and then had spread throughout the body. And he was just 75, and, you know, super active person too. And mm-hmm. So that was kind of a shocker. And then a year later, I about bit the dust. So
right,
it was a bad stretch there.
You never know when your time is going to come. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is. And I was really blessed too. I was at the junior high at that time, and with especially Mrs. Deacon making all kinds of concessions for, you know, for me to be able to come back and teach, and you know, I was doing water therapy in the pool, and of course I had to, you know, get to that during the daytime hours to do it. And so I was able to arrange with her to, you know, get away and do the pool therapy and different things, and you know, staff really helped out a ton too during that time period. So
they were just really accommodating.
They
wouldn't do that if they didn't like you.
That's right.
I'm not surprised that they liked you so much, because it seems like you were a great member to have on the staff.
Nope, they really came through and helped out a ton when I needed it. So.
Well, so now what are you doing? You, like I said, you seem to be busy. You seem to be helping out with, whether it's helping rebuild Marsh Park, or you're building these extremely impressive wood tables, or wood, I don't even want to call them toys for kids, because they're some high-end toys if they are toys.
Yeah, I never really had a chance to do the woodworking, and I always loved doing that. And so when we moved here, I built a shop inside my shed and kind of do a mixture of things. My wife said, I wouldn't never believe you would do this, but I started doing some markets, and that's just not like me to go sit somewhere for 7 or 8 hours during the day, you know, at a third Sunday market or whatever. Mm-hmm. So for those kind of markets, you got to have all kinds of different things. You can't just make one thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 'Cause trying to, you know, meet different people's interests. So I'll make, you know, kitchen tables and barnwood stuff and whatever.
My brother and my sister-in-law actually have one of your tables.
Yes, they
do. It's like their dining table now.
Yes.
I walked in the other day and I saw that. I'm like, this thing is sweet. Like, where'd you get this? Like, oh, Brad Maley made it for us. I'm like, you're kidding me.
Yeah, just not very long ago.
Yeah.
And then
I got to say, the price on that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I've seen them sell for 4 times that much
and
be that quality. So.
Yeah, I try to keep things reasonable. And I think that's something. I was just talking to another former teacher the other day about this, that it's hard to really put a good value on your labor when you're doing something, because you're mm-hmm. so used to teaching where you're just basically, you know, donating so much of your labor.
Yeah.
And then I got into making these farm toys. I'm not sure how I got started, but I did. They're basically toys to go behind pedal tractors. And
toys that go behind. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, kids have little tractors. You can hook these on.
Yeah, you can hook these onto them. And then 2 years ago at the Thresherman's, I got hooked up with this guy from Indiana. And he's a big Minneapolis Moline pedal tractor collector. And he has like, you know, 80 some pedal tractors, and just unreal. And he said, I want you to build me a cotton picker. And I said, a what? And so I played around, got one made, and made some corn pickers that actually set on the pedal tractors. And then the big thing now I'm really selling a lot of is manure spreaders to go behind the pedal tractors.
Like toy manure spreaders?
Yeah, they're about 3 feet long as well.
You must be selling strictly to the farming community,
families. These are collectors for the most part.
Oh, collectors?
Yeah, most of them aren't toys that are going to be played with.
I was going to say, I'm like, these, I wouldn't almost let my kids play with these.
No.
Like, these are too high end.
They're going to pedal tractor collectors.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm not into that. I mean, I've got 4 or 5 pedal tractors, but those people just amaze me.
Is this like a job for you?
Or? It almost has turned into a job. It seems like
it started as a hobby.
Yeah,
but
it did. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just really taken off, and I don't want it to become a job or a business, because, you know, I don't want to get into all the financial and tax and all that stuff. But it's enough to keep me busy, and COVID really killed it. this summer. I had stuff made that, for example, a couple from Kansas City was going to drive out here and pick it up. They didn't want it shipped. They wanted to come get it, older couple. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's great. Well, then COVID hit, and they were an older couple. And they said, oh, can we wait? And he said, we're just afraid of COVID. And I said, oh, yeah, that's fine, you know. And long story short, they ended up with COVID and never did were able to come and get it.
Are they still around?
I think I don't remember which one for sure, but I think one of them actually did pass away.
Oh my gosh, from COVID?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Like I said, they were probably in their late 70s, early 80s, anyway. And so it actually was the guy that passed away. And so I told the gal, I said, no problem. You know, she was all worried about it, and I said, I won't have any problem selling them. You know, just don't worry about it. And actually. Sold all three pieces to a lady down at Mahomet not too long ago.
There you go.
It worked out.
Sheesh, what a crazy time right now.
It is.
Would you say that, I mean, you've done a lot of things in the past few decades. Mm-hmm. Is this pretty significant time, would you say, with COVID? Like,
oh, yeah.
Is this pretty crazy to witness?
Yeah, it's the craziest thing I've seen in my 61 years. And you know, even like my playing around with the toys, right now I'm going to have to stop because the price of lumber is about tripled.
Are you kidding me? Really?
No. And it's come down just a little bit, but you know, when you're making something like I'm making there, you can't just add it on to the price because people are going to reach that limit where they won't pay it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm probably going to have to slow down and go to making barn wood type objects, you know?
So you got your hands full still. You're staying busy.
Yep.
And you're still young. You're only 61, you said.
Yep.
And you're able, you know, as long as that foot's able, you're going to be able. What are your plans for the future then?
No definite plans. My wife just retired, so we're hoping to, you know, be able to get out and do some traveling. And we don't really need to travel too much. We've got our place here with the...
This is a destination in itself.
Yeah, with the lake and... jet skis and fishing and grandkids all the time. And before we built this place, we had actually looked at some places down at Kentucky Lake because we always said we were going to retire down at Kentucky Lake. And we've been going down there for 30 plus years. And we looked at some houses and it's, you know, it's kind of weird down there. You can look at a $700,000 house and property taxes are like $1,400. Mm-hmm. And you know, here they'd be, you know, $12,000-$14,000 or more. But with grandkids and you know, different things, we decided this was the best bet for us, and we retired on water, just not quite as big as Kentucky Lake.
Yeah.
And we still go down to Kentucky every summer.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, it's tough. Sometimes it's kind of tough to leave Fairbury. It's a good mm-hmm. it's a good area for sure. Prairie right. Central is a great area.
Yeah, yeah, we love it. We both grew up here, so we've got plenty to keep us busy. And probably the only negative I have right now, and like I say, we spend a lot of time with the grandkids. Is I'm just so limited in what I can physically do mm-hmm. with the grandkids. We were jumping rope the other night.
That doesn't sound like it's the best thing to do for your foot.
No, I was going to show one of them, you know, how to do a different jump, and I jumped twice, and I'm still paying for it.
Oh my gosh!
So,
that's annoying.
It's just that kind of stuff that, you know, kind of limits what I can do physically now. But you know, still, I can do a lot of stuff. And
mm-hmm. I mean, you've lived a pretty cool life, I would say. I mean, it seems mm-hmm. like your wife, by the way, seems like an incredible woman. She's stuck with you through everything, and she's she's been there for you, it seems like.
That's my former staff members have told her that many times, that she must be pretty special to have put up with me for this long. So yeah, we'll be hitting 40 years here.
Well, congratulations. So, that is awesome.
Yep, it is. It is.
Well, before we wrap things up here, you know, is there anything else you'd like to say before we do so?
No, I think this has been a great conversation, and really pleased to help you out. And it just tickles me to see you doing something that you love to do too. And it's always great to see former students doing neat things. So
yeah, well, thank you very much.
That's really cool.
All right, well, Brad Maley, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
You are welcome, and my pleasure. Mm.